This one's on, the needles are moving, and we're live. So, as promised, today is August 2nd, 2012. My name is Philip Scarpino, professor of history at IUPUI, and I'm interviewing Mr. Milton Baltimore. This is the second interview with Mr. Baltimore. The subject of today's interview will be Mr. Baltimore's association with the Roberts Settlement. And we are, in fact, sitting in the church building located at Roberts Settlement in Hamilton County. Mr. Baltimore owns much of the land associated with the site of the Roberts Settlement. Although there is no longer an active settlement, family and friends gather each summer for a reunion. A little bit of history on Roberts Settlement. Elijah Roberts migrated west from Northampton County, North Carolina, to Western Ohio in 1825. From there, Elijah Roberts and relatives moved to Rush County, Indiana, where they formed a community called Beet Settlement. In 1835, Elijah Roberts and members of his family moved to Hamilton County and established Roberts Settlement. 10 African-American farmers purchased more than 900 acres. Elijah Roberts died in 1848, and his wife, Kessia, K-E-S-S-I-A-H, continued to farm their land. Mr. Baltimore's mother was a direct descendant of Elijah Roberts. So, Mr. Baltimore, I'd like to ask your permission to record this interview, to transcribe the interview if we have the money to do it, and to put the recording in the transcription, if we make one, in the IUPUI archives and special collections for the use of their patrons.
Yes, sir, and that will help pay for any...
No need to do that. Okay. Your time is what we're after here.
Definitely.
So, just for the sake of anybody who's listening to this interview and hasn't heard the first one, I'm going to ask you to repeat a few things that we talked about last time. So you mentioned that your father was born and raised in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And when was he born?
1912.
Okay. And what was his name?
Milton Baltimore. I'm junior.
And your mother was born when?
1909 in Evansville, Indiana.
Okay. And she is the direct descendant, right, of Elijah Roberts. Okay. Then your parents met at Wilberforce College in Ohio.
Right.
Were married in 1935. And I understand that there are two families that still own land,
right,
that remains associated with the Roberts,
right,
Settlement. You're one.
Right.
And the other one is?
What's Lawrence that? Duval.
D-U-A-V-A-L?
No, D-U-V-A-L-L. Okay. Lawrence Duval. He doesn't live out here, but he owns property out here.
And is he also directly descended?
Oh, yes. Okay. Direct. Yeah.
Okay, so I've got a bunch of questions that I want to ask you, but I'm going to start with this. For the sake of anybody who's listening, I'm going to say that we're sitting in the original or surviving church from Roberts Settlement. It's a small church building, very nicely maintained on the inside with hardwood floors that are all shiny from a recent reunion, and the pews facing the altar in the front and so on and so forth. But here's what I want to ask you. When you sit here and look around this lovely little church, what do you remember?
Oh, quite a few things. I was a youngster. We would have this, quite a few youngsters out here would gather every Sunday and sometimes even on Saturday for a worship service, and that would be a big social event and religious event and things like that. There were a few adults, so we didn't really have a formal church service, but because we didn't have we used to have a traveling minister that would come. But mostly we would have a Sunday school every Sunday, say from about, some people come as early as 8 just to be with the other kids, to at least 1 or 2. And sometimes after the Sunday school, we would have a little gathering out on the lawn. And it was a very good time. That was one time when all the kids, there were about at least 20 youngsters in their early teens, and that would meet every Sunday.
And
until about 1950, then they moved away. So, but from about 45 to 50, it was quite a few young kids that lived out here.
Mm-hmm. And these were African-American?
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Well, some, because of marriage, some white. But, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, African-American, they were together every Sunday. I moved up here in 45 to about 50. But before that, it was even larger. But they had gradually moved away.
And but you also lived out here in the 1930s, right, as a child?
No. I was born in 36. I was born in Indianapolis.
Right. Okay, you're right, yeah.
And then we moved out here in the 40s because my parents had other kids.
Okay. You mentioned, obviously, we're sitting in the church. There was a circuit riding preacher. Somebody would come
on. Yeah, for a while, but when the attendance was good, but then after a while, he didn't come, and we just had some adult to take over the Sunday school teaching, things like that.
And what denomination
was it? Well, just any, you know, just, you know, it wasn't like Baptist, Methodist. Maybe mostly, I think it was Wesleyan, mm-hmm. Methodist and Wesleyan. Mm-hmm. But we didn't really get into that. It's mostly Sunday school. We had Sunday school lesson books that we read and mm-hmm. things like that.
So this was, in addition to a religious place, it was a social gathering place?
Well, now I'm talking about when I was there. In the early days, they had enough adults where they would have a minister.
Regular services.
But as time went on, people left.
Do you happen to know when this church was built?
It says on the out there, it says 1837, but you hear various years, but it was in the 1830s, mm-hmm. for sure. As you hear different stories change and all that, but it's in the 1830s for sure.
So by the time you were a teenager, a young man, and you were here going to Sunday school, it was both a place for Sunday school and a place to get together with your family and friends.
Right, because we didn't have television or computer games and things like that.
Mm-hmm. People have pitch-in dinners?
Oh, sometimes, after church, sometimes, not all the time. Mm-hmm. But it was really happy, that's a chance to see the other kids, which you saw anyway, because we rode the school bus together to Atlanta, Indiana, that's where we all went to school. Mm-hmm. Except the people lived across the highway, they went to Sheridan. Indiana schools. There was some part of Albert Selma was on the other side of the highway, but this was the main part. And the kids over here went to Atlanta Grade School.
And the highway we're talking about is Highway 31, which is the main north-south highway.
Right.
One other thing, you and I rode up here together from Indianapolis in a car, and you were telling me that right out here where you turn off on 276th Street, we turned east on 276th Street, but right there where 276 crosses 31, there used to be a truck stop.
Yeah, right.
And the name of that truck stop was what?
Midway, M-I-D-W-A-Y.
And that was also a social gathering place.
Right.
And so it's empty
now. Because
it
had a jukebox. Having a jukebox was a big thing those days. You know, you put money in, they played. It was a jukebox. We weren't used to it then. They had a jukebox and
so
you drink.
This would have been in the 1940s?
Yeah, late 40s 50s? And maybe early 50s. 1940s mostly, or before that. But when I was only talking about from about 45 to 50, that's when I was living out here.
Okay, so I'm imagining you going in there
in
the late 1940s.
Yeah.
And putting money in the jukebox.
Right.
What were you playing?
Just whatever the.
What did you want to hear? What was it?
This was the hits of the days where I sort of forgot now. But
yeah.
Wasn't any rock and roll, loud music, hollering, talking about all this. It wasn't any kind of stuff like nowadays. Just maybe just calm, slow music, you know, just something the kids dance about.
Is there food there?
Oh, yeah, right. That old soda fountain, you might remember that. And you could buy hamburgers and things like that. It was mostly a truck stop. Truckers would stop off to get gas and come in, but they didn't mind the kids being in there because we usually didn't come in there till mostly on Saturday, that afternoon or Sunday afternoon.
And were there any issues with African American
kids?
Oh,
no, never. One thing I can say, never was any racial issues, to my knowledge, with the blacks and whites, none.
Everybody's money was green?
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. So you have good memories of being there?
Oh, yeah. I had good memories of living up here for sure. We had a horse, I remember we had horse and animals and a little garden, things like that. We weren't farmers, but we had a garden and some animals.
And the garden was obviously, it was to raise food for the
family? Oh, yeah, right. We used to raise most all our food and didn't have to go into town for hardly any food. Most of our food, we had chickens and they laid their eggs, of course, and things like that. And we would have what is called a freezer. You know, the freezer in town, you would kill a hog or cow or something and store the meat in a freezer locker.
We did that when I was young.
Yeah, we did that too. My mother would have the meat cut up, and every once a week, that was a big thing. You go into town, get a piece of meat from the locker, freezer, you know, that was a big thing.
So did you raise your own pigs?
Well, sort of. Now, we weren't farmers, but we had maybe had a pig or two, but some of the neighborhood farmers like Ralph Mitchell's, we would have animals, and we would, get them from buying from him or get them from him.
Mm-hmm. So your meat basically was raised locally,
right?
And then it would be butchered and put in the locker,
right?
And then you'd bring it up here as you needed
right,
it,
right?
What do you remember? What you grew in the garden?
What
kind of vegetables?
All of them, like all of them, potatoes, green beans, onion, all that stuff, radishes.
And did your mother can that stuff?
Oh yeah, so yeah, she and a neighbor woman in that Duval, they would. A big thing was being for canning food and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yep.
In glass jars?
Yeah.
Yeah. With red rubber
right,
seals?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big thing. We also used it as a social thing too, because the women in the neighborhood, they would get together in one house and do this. And
they would can whatever was ripe.
Right. And the kids would get together and play.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good time, for a clean life.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we didn't have television. We had radio, and I remember on the radio, every 15 minutes, there was a new soap opera show that would come on. It lasts only 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
My Gal Sunday, Helen Trent, and all those stories that eventually went on to the television.
Mm-hmm.
But they would only be 15 minutes. And then another, they had a lot of soap opera stories.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy listening to the radio?
Well, I really didn't think of it that much because most of my parents listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we would listen to the music or something like that. But, we're very limited in listening to the radio because we didn't really have it, and we didn't have no television whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But we had neighbors across the road that we would play with kids our age.
Mm-hmm. So we mentioned that your parents met at Wilberforce College in Ohio. They were married in 1935.
Right.
And that your mother inherited land, and she is a direct descendant of Elijah Roberts, who was the founder.
Right.
So the land went from your mother to you.
Right.
Right. Who did your mother inherit the land from?
Her mother.
Her mother.
Al Mary.
And how do we spell Al Mary?
Almary.
All right.
It was Elijah Roberts. He had several children, but one of the children was named Peter Roberts, and we'll see the house that he built.
Right.
And then Peter had just one child, a daughter, Almary, Almary, and she was my mother's mother, my grandmother.
And the interesting thing that I just found out is that Elijah Roberts, Peter Roberts, Almary Roberts, and your mother are all buried in the little cemetery behind this small church.
Usually we try to keep them in the families in the same row. The Rice family is right across from us, and my side of the family's there, and then we try to keep it like that, but it was a first come, first served thing. So whoever came up here put a tombstone, that was it. It didn't cost anything to be buried here.
And I noticed that some of the people were buried, you told me, in caskets, and other people were cremated.
Oh, yeah. Well, the cremation thing started with my aunt. She was the very first one to be cremated. And then it spread to my parents, and of course, spread to me, and then a couple other people. But none of these other people are cremated. The only ones that I can know is my aunt, my parents, and me eventually, and a couple of cousins. That's something new.
So we're sitting in this little church that represents a free African-American settlement that goes back into the 1830s.
Yeah.
Behind the church is a small cemetery with where the people who lived and worked and played and grew up here are buried.
Right.
What does this place mean to you?
Oh, a whole lot. That's what I'm... there's a whole lot. I want to make sure it continues on because it's dwindled in population, things like that. But I'm trying to keep the interest going by contacting people who were descendants. I send out mailings to come to the reunion and things like that. But it means a whole lot to me, especially since I'm going to be buried out there.
There is a tombstone out there with your birth date on it, and that's all for now.
Right, because I didn't know what I was going to... Right. 1936.
And you also pointed out to me that, there are a number of people who either grew up out here or associated with Roberts Settlement that really have gone on to have pretty successful lives.
Right. The most famous one is Carl G. Roberts. He grew up here on a farm, not too far from here, but he didn't want to be a farmer. And he went to Vincennes. I think he was the first black to graduate from Vincennes. I'm not positive about that, but that's what I heard, the story. But he went on to medical school and became an outstanding surgeon, well-known surgeon in Chicago, Illinois. But he would come every 4th of July for the reunion. I have his picture. His picture's back there on the wall.
And
Carl D. Roberts.
He said he was a surgeon in Chicago.
Right.
Did he encounter any obstacles being a black surgeon?
I don't know about his life in Chicago, but probably so. But the people out here, I don't think out here in the community, they didn't really have any racial problems. I never encountered any racial problems.
So your parents then were in Ohio. They were married. They decided to move back to Indiana.
Because her father, my grandfather, lived in Indianapolis, and it was during the Depression.
Right.
It was hard to get a job, hard to do anything. And even though he had a college degree from Wilberforce to be a school teacher, he couldn't teach in Indianapolis public schools except an all-black school, and there weren't any openings. So he took a job with WPA.
Right.
Under Franklin Roosevelt, started that. And he just did odd jobs and stuff till eventually he was able to get on teaching in Indianapolis schools, because he couldn't be hired at a white school if schools were segregated.
So your family at some point decided to move out here, right?
Oh, well, we were living with my grandparents upstairs.
In Indianapolis.
Right. Yeah. And then they got so many kids, we moved out to the farm here because we could live free.
And do you remember when that was?
In the early 1940s.
Okay. So you were a young boy?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you find it to be exciting to move out here?
Well, I was just a little kid. I could ride a horse and all that kind of stuff. I was just a little kid in the fifth grade or fourth grade, something like that.
And your family lived out here for about 10 years?
Yeah.
Until your dad got tired of commuting? And,
right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you didn't farm. Your family didn't farm.
No, no.
Was anyone else farming out here at that time?
Yes.
Any other African-American families?
Yes. Doug Mitchell's father, Ralph Mitchell, was a well-known farmer, highly respected. There was another family called Rice, R-I-C-E, and then had that brick house down there. He was a well-known farmer, a well successful farmer. And the Duvalls, they were farmers, and some others. There was about five black farmers out here.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, Mr. Rice lost his farm because he went to a nursing home, didn't have insurance. It's really sad. And Duvalls eventually died. And the last black farmer we had that was really well known, he was well liked, Ralph Mitchell, the father of Doug Mitchell, the basketball coach. I'll show you the house where he lived down the road there. But he didn't want to be a farmer, he just wanted to be a basketball coach.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful one. And unfortunately, when he would coach all these players like Eric Garden and all them, he was their coach. And his son was an aspiring good player, about 15 years old, and one day he got killed in a car accident. So he just tore him up all the threads, and so he just sold his farm. He didn't live out here, but he had property out here. His mother was living on the farm, but when his father died, his mother and him, they sold the farm. She moved into Noblesville, and he just was living in Indianapolis.
Okay, so when your family lived out here,
yeah,
and your dad was commuting to Indianapolis, and your mom was working to take care of the family.
Right, nine kids at one time, but some of us died, so it was only really basically six.
Did you have electricity in the house?
Oh, not at first, not at first. I remember it was a big thing getting electricity put in about 1947 or 48. That was a big thing. Mm-hmm. And then we had an outdoor commode and having an indoor toilet. That was really another big thing. See, we had an outside toilet. And the way we took baths was we had a big tub. We only took a bath about twice a week. Well, we had this big tub, and we had well water pump for water. We didn't have any running water. We just had a pump. When we fill up the tub, and then the boys, me and my brother, take it together, and then we dump it out, get some clean water, and then my sister would take turns. We had a real big tub. But we didn't have any running water. We used the well water.
And was the pump in the house or outside?
No, outside, outside.
So you had to haul water.
Yeah. But that was fun, something to do, no big deal.
So when you first moved out here, all the water that your mother used for cooking
was from well water.
And it had to be pumped and hauled into the house.
Right, right.
No electricity?
No, not at first, but eventually we did, and that was a big deal.
So how do you think life changed when you got indoor plumbing and electricity?
Oh, just about the same, basically, except in more convenience.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, basically the same. But I think back, my ancestors didn't have electricity and water and all that stuff, and they made it pretty good. And Abraham Lincoln didn't have it because I went to see his house down in there. So, I mean, you can survive and make it.
You and I didn't
so,
have
So, I mean,
water
I didn't
either.
Even really pay any attention. You don't really pay any attention to that stuff. You know that when you lived in Indianapolis, located, we had electricity, running water, and all that. But when we moved out of the country, well, out in the country, you know, you're supposed to rough it, you might say. And I remember for heat, we had a cold stove. We would have a coal bin in the back of the house, and I had to bring in this coal to put in the furnace and things like that. For heat, we had a cold stove.
Mm-hmm. And was was that in the basement or upstairs?
No, we didn't have a basement.
No
none
basement.
None of these houses had. One house had a basement. Mm-hmm. It was upstairs in the main room, you might say, was we had a cold stove. And then that's where we mostly sat and everything, and that was it.
So the house that your family lived in, is it still standing?
No. We lived in two different houses. One is still standing, I'm going to show it to you, but the other one is torn down because another person bought part of the property where the house was. My mother sold some of her land, not of the 150 acres, but another. See, I have the 150, but I also bought some land on my own. I own 25 acres. I'll show you down the hall in a few minutes. And then my mother had some acres, and that's where we lived. And it was torn down after we left by Beck to make, you know, farmland.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned when you moved out here, there was no electricity,
nope.
No indoor water. No.
That
water
was all over. I mean, even...
Yeah.
I think maybe Sonny Beck might have had it, but no one out here had it.
Did you have a telephone?
Oh, yeah, we had our wall telephone that, you know, turn away, crank. And when one ring was one person's, two rings was another person, but everyone listened, everybody knew it, because that's how they got the gossip.
So you're on a party line.
Pick it up and put the hand over the mouthpiece and just listen what they're saying. And we would always say, now we know someone else is listening, but, you know, that was the way... Everybody did that.
People listened in. When,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember party lines.
Yeah.
So what kind of a stove did your mother cook on? Do you remember? If you didn't have any electricity.
No, just a stove where you had to put coal in and all
that
type stuff. And
so she worked hard.
Oh, yes. I had a great mother. Whew. Yeah, I had a great mother.
Must have been awful hot cooking on a coal stove in the summer.
Well, that's what they, now see, during when it was time for school, most of us were gone, except my younger brother, but he eventually left. So she was home all day, and mostly she washed the clothes and cooked and all that kind of stuff.
So you said that your parents eventually had 9 children?
Well, my mother was married once before. I have an older brother. You've seen this picture.
His name is what?
Aver Corley.
Yeah.
He was a Montford Point Marine. When he was 17 years old, he ran off and joined the Marine Corps. And then he came back after that. And then my parents, my mother and father, had 8 kids, but 3 of them died. So actually, she only reared us 5 and Carly. Because when Carly got out of the Marine Corps after 3 years, he came back and lived with us and until he finished high school, because he had dropped out of high school. He finished high school up here in Arcadia called Jackson Central.
So your mom had...
9 children.
Herself? She had a husband.
Right.
She had 5 children who lived and grew up,
right.
And she cooked and cleaned for all those people.
Yeah, and sometimes the neighbor, you know, neighbor kids, they were just like our mother. We would go over to someone's house out and maybe eat over there.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a good thing. So we had several times we had the Granger family would come over. Sometimes maybe they didn't have enough food or something like that, so they would eat over our house.
So you mentioned sharing the bath a couple times a week with your brothers.
Yeah,
did you share a room?
Oh, yeah. We only had 2. We had 3 bedrooms, my parents, the girls' room, and the boys' room. But those 2 bedrooms were upstairs.
So how many boys shared the room?
Just me and my brother.
Yeah.
And my older brother when he came back from the military.
Yeah.
We had bunk beds and all that kind of stuff.
So how did
you... It was a fun time. I have no regrets.
So I'm trying to imagine my, you know, some 16-year-old kid listening to this right now, but so you lived out here in a house that had no electricity,
no
running water.
Eventually we did, but not at the very beginning.
You had no air conditioning, no television, no computers.
No, it didn't have that. Never did have air conditioning or TV until we moved to Indianapolis.
So how did you live?
I mean, how did people live? A lot of people lived, you know, I mean, people lived generations. They didn't have none of that stuff.
So what'd you do for fun?
Just play with other kids and stuff like that.
Did you read?
Oh, yeah, I read and play with other kids. Well, we had a horseback riding and just play out in the fields and all that. So I have no complaints because I didn't know about all that big city stuff, so I didn't miss it.
Yeah. So when you look back on living out here, what do you think was the most important thing?
Well, you stayed out of trouble. It was clean living. You didn't... It was clean living.
Okay, and so you went to elementary school out here?
Right, Atlanta, Indiana. The school is now torn down.
And how far away is that?
About 5 miles. The school bus would come and they stop down there, pick up Sonny Beck, and they're both black and whites.
Mm-hmm.
But the blacks live mostly down here and the whites live over elsewhere. And so the pick up Sonny Beck and then drive down, pick up some more kids, and then pick us up, Mitchell kids, Granger kids, and then go around the Highway 31 and go down to 266th Street. And then going in Arcadia. The first stop off in Arcadia, drop off the high school kids, and then we'll go up to Atlanta. It's about close to an hour's ride.
Mm-hmm.
And we all look forward to that because we were on the bus and all that. We didn't have any trouble on the bus, you know, fighting and all that. I can't remember any like fighting or acting silly on the bus or any place, even in the school.
Mm-hmm. You think the bus driver would have put up with it?
Well, we just had respect for him, you know, and he said, "Nah, man, your parents rode this bus, and I didn't have any trouble with them, so I'm going to tell them on you." And, you know, because a lot of our parents, not my parents, but a lot of the other parents, you know, they rode the same bus driver. He was an old man named Frank,
mm-hmm.
and he was real, real good.
So what kind of an education do you think you got at that elementary school?
Not necessarily all that much academically, but socially and other things, a real good education. And we didn't hear about all this sex stuff and this and that. I think I did okay. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I interacted with other races and just a clean. I know one thing I learned that the city people don't know. They think that if you ask every city person, they think that a cow, they don't know what a steer is.
Right.
For example, if you have like 25 male cows and 25 female cows, you don't keep the 25 male cows. You only keep about two for bulls. The others, they get, you know, castrated, and that's what you eat.
Right.
A lot of people don't know that steers is what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
They think you eat the milk cows and stuff. No, you eat the steer, but a lot of people didn't know that.
So do you think that growing up in a world where you knew where your food came from and all that made a difference in your life?
Yeah, I really enjoyed living out here. I have no complaints.
You mentioned to me the first time that I met you that when you were in grade school, at Atlanta grade school, you were the only black student.
Right, because of my age.
Right.
You know, there weren't.
There were others around, but not in that age category.
Right, but then a couple years later, another black family, they were all living there, but the son, when they were divorced, the son lived with the father. He came and lived with the mother, and he went to school. We were in the same grade, David Granger.
Mm-hmm. And how did that work out?
Fine, no complaints. It made it better. And they always looked, a lot of people, they liked the black man, David Granger, because for some reason there was a feeling that if you're black, you're stronger and better in sports than white. They talk about, look at Joe Louis, look at Jesse Owens, look at that. So David Granger and I played basketball and everything.
Yeah.
We wasn't necessarily all that good, but because we were black and played sports, you know, we got a lot of fun from that.
Mm-hmm.
They thought just like, because we were black, we knew how to play basketball, we were good, dance and all that. So we played with it, you know. So we were on the basketball team and all that.
Could you dance when you were young?
Oh, man? Yeah. You know,
what dances do you remember doing?
Back in those days, you know.
Jitterbug?
Yeah, it was just before Dick Clark came around, you know. Whatever the dance it was, just
mm-hmm. Yeah. Dick Clark was what, in the 50s.
Oh yeah, he was later on, but I'm saying that's.
Mm-hmm. One of your, not quite a classmate, it was a few years younger than you, was a young man named Sonny Beck.
Oh yeah, yeah, he's a white guy. Yeah,
drive around here now with Beck names all over all the cornfields.
Right.
And his father at that point owned the seed company.
Right. Well, his grandfather started it.
Yeah.
And then his father, and then him. And he's right down the road. He knows me personally. In fact, he, you know, he does my farmland and everything. If I go in there right now, I could say, hey, son, if he's there, he's gone quite a bit. But it's a tremendous, he did tremendous growth in his plant. So it was just about one little small building when his father had it, but he went to Purdue, graduated, got a master's in agriculture and all that, and gave $3 million to Purdue. They named the building after him and all that stuff.
And it's basically a seed company, is that right?
Corn, yeah.
Okay.
Now, my field, one of the field I own by myself, 25 acres, had soybeans this year.
Mm-hmm.
And your rotation, you know, 1 year, you don't plant the same thing over and over, you try to rotate it.
You think you were better off planting soybeans this year?
I left that up to him. As long as he gets, whatever he gets me half and he keeps half.
Mm-hmm.
And I pay for the taxes and he pays for the supplies and stuff. Cause, yeah. So I don't care. I leave it up to him. But I trust him completely, 1,000%.
So as you look back on the time that you spent living out here, Robert Settlement, as a young man, what impact do you think that had on the man you became?
Gave me stayed out of trouble, gave me more values. I appreciated how my parents were, because, man, they were hardworking. Whew, my mother especially. My father would always be on, driving down to Indianapolis, coming home. He was really only with us on weekends. Sometimes he would come during the week, but sometimes the big snow and stuff, he would stay in town at the YMCA or someplace like that. But, man, I really have a lot of respect for my mother. Whew. And just a clean living, stayed out of trouble. We didn't hear a whole lot of cursing and sex and all that, drinking and all that, smoking cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
You've hung on to the land that you inherited.
Oh, yeah. From your mother. I got it. I inherited it.
Yeah. I
bought 25 acres on my own. I can show it to you later on.
Do you think it's important that this place
survives? Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, my son, I hope he doesn't sell it, but who knows. But one time, from Highway 31 all the way down there, it was all owned by blacks, just on this.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's mostly all gone.
People have moved away?
Yeah, moved away and all that.
What do you think this place represents now? Why do you think it's important to keep
it? Something you can look back on, children look back on and say, wow. You can appreciate what your parents and grandparents and so forth did. They realized how they had to toll the land and cut down the trees and do all this.
Mm-hmm.
And try to pass it on to the kids. It really means a lot to me. I'm going to try to hold on. That's why I'm trying to, every year when we had the reunion, I try to contact people and to come back and so forth.
So as I sit here and look around the inside of this church, it is remarkably well maintained.
Yeah.
This
back when they built churches. I mean, houses. They didn't throw up something overnight.
Well, but I mean, if I'm looking down. You've got hardwood floors here.
Yeah. Well, this is something recent.
New floor.
Yeah.
The walls are.
This
painted.
Wasn't here in 1830.
No, I know that.
Well, this is something we had done.
I mean, the only thing that I see in here at all is there's a little bit of staining in one corner from.
Yeah.
So, who pays to keep this place up?
Well, we have when we have a meeting, we get a donation of about $2,000 or $3,000, but we don't have to pay taxes or anything like that on this. We don't pay taxes, and that guy there cuts the grass, as you can see, he's a distant relative, but we pay him something to cut the grass. I mean, that's all there is to it.
And this building is on the National Register?
Yes, right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A woman named Tanya Goodlow was the one that did it. She's a relative. She did all the paperwork and put it on there, had it done.
Do you know when the reunions began?
It didn't start when it first started, around in the 1920s of the first reunion around 1920-something. It's out there in the hallway. Mm-hmm. Thing around 1920. But they've always had gatherings, but I guess they started reunions because people we're moving away, and then we called a reunion because it came back. But we've always had gatherings, if you understand what I mean, because we were always out here. But as people moved away, then we started trying to call them, get in contact for them to come back. So around 1927, I got the paper out there in the hallway.
So when you were a young man living out here, did people come back once a year? For
They've been doing that ever since 1927.
It must have been a big party.
Yeah, there's a picture of them almost every year back there on the wall.
Well, that must have been a big party for young kids when.
Yeah, They weren't playing any loud music and all that stuff. It was just mostly playing little games together, yeah.
Why do you think people keep coming back?
Well, I mean, the ancestors are buried out there is one reason to look at their graves, and they also see their relatives. Mm-hmm. So they moved all over, mostly to Detroit. A lot of them moved to Detroit.
Working in the automobile industry?
Right.
Yeah.
And some of the ancestors regret it now because...
Well, farming's a hard life, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You can't make... There used to be that you could farm and make it, but nowadays you can't. You have to be a big corporation. So Ralph Mitchell was about the last individual farmer up here.
So one of the reasons that, among many, that people left is that it became harder and harder to make a living as on a small family farm.
Right, plus the jobs opened up in Detroit. I remember a couple of guys, oh man, I'm gonna quit farming, I'm gonna do the big city, Detroit.
Well, they were good union jobs with benefits
in
those days. When did you start getting involved with the reunions?
Well...
I mean, as an organizer.
Well, I say when I was about in my 30s, when the older people started dying and everything, they started looking toward the younger people to take over, about maybe 20 or 30 years ago. But I've always been to, I've been to every reunion, but as far as helping organize it, it was about 20 years ago.
So in a few minutes, we're gonna drive around and look at some of the places, but before I turn off the recorders, is there anything that you want to add that I haven't asked you, or anything that you want to say that I just haven't had the insight to bring up?
Well, it's really surprising. A lot of people don't realize that there were black farmers, black settlements all over Indiana and other states. Mm-hmm. A black farmer? I remember one time a person said, a black nun, Catholic nun? I don't know of any black Catholic nun. A black farmer? I didn't know any black farmers. And so there were black farmers, landowners, just like there were black congressmen way back after the Civil War,
right, Reconstruction,
doing Reconstruction. Yeah. People didn't know about that. I said, wow.
So Elijah...
And the Ku Klux Klan really didn't bother us up here.
Yeah, in the 1920s,
Right. They didn't bother us up here at all.
So Elijah Roberts, when he moved out here with his family in the 1830s, he was a free African American.
Yeah, right.
Do you think... I mean, for a lot of African American people, it's hard to trace their ancestry back before the Civil War because
right.
But for people who were associated with Robert's settlement, they can do it because those people were free.
Right.
Do you think that makes a difference that you know who your your ancestors were for sure?
Yeah. And more and more blacks especially are looking into it. And Alex Haley wrote roots. He's one that really one of the first ones that really got people interested in tracing their roots. And it's the thing. It's fascinating to know where, what your parents were and who they came, grandparents and all that kind of stuff. Just like my father's father in Washington, D.C., he owned the land that the FBI building forced him to sell so they can build that new FBI building on.
He had a bicycle shop there.
Right. That was a big thing during the early 1900s. He has a bicycle and shop in the early 1920s. In fact, my father rode one of his bicycles from Washington, D.C., I think I told you this, to Wilberforce, Ohio, to go to college. But he had a real nice bicycle shop. Of course, it was fading out as years went on. And so the FBI building that's sitting on there now, J. Edgar Hoover building, is on the land that my grandfather owned. Of course, they paid him some money.
What was your grandfather's name?
Jeremiah D. Baltimore. Jeremiah A. Baltimore. His grandfather was D. Jeremiah A. Baltimore.
And it was Jeremiah A. Baltimore that owned that?
Yes, but he dropped out of high school. His brother, Jeremiah D. Baltimore, became a real well-known lawyer in Washington, D.C. He had a brother, and his brother. Yeah, he became a real well-known lawyer, Jeremiah Daniels Baltimore. And his grandson is an ambassador. I have a cousin who is an ambassador to the country of Oman. You heard of O-M-A-N?
Yeah.
My cousin is a United States ambassador to that. Name is Richard Baltimore. He went to Harvard Law School, and he was appointed by Bush or Clinton or somebody. But I got the papers at home.
Mm-hmm.
See, my grandfather Baltimore had a brother, like I said, who went to college as a lawyer, and then he had a son. Son or grandson that is now, he was ambassador, he's Richard Baltimore. I don't know if he has a position today with the change of administration, But we used to keep in touch, but not too much now.
Are you proud of what your family accomplished?
Oh, yes. Heavens, yeah. And my family, especially my mother, man, she, and my grandparents, look at out in all this woods and stuff. They built all these houses and all that. Mm-hmm.
And, so I'm going to ask you one more question, yeah. And then we'll turn this off. If somehow, some way, you could talk to Elijah Roberts.
I would deeply appreciate it. Man, how did you do this? You were a young man, too. He died. He was born in 1795, died in 1853. He was in his early 50s when he died.
Yeah.
But his wife lived to be in the 90s.
Yeah.
But did you see it out there?
I did. Wife?
Yeah, she lived to be in the 90s. She, I said, man, how did you have the whatever. You weren't lazy, that's for sure. None of the people up here were lazy. And how'd you have the foresight to come way up here and all that? Man, he was really, he didn't go to college, high school, and all that stuff. He could read and write, but he didn't. Man, that was a tremendous thing. So.
Well, I'm going to turn the recorders off, but before I do that, I want to thank you very
much.
Well,
thank you. I'm really glad that this interview, and I hope I sounded okay, but, don't know.
You sounded more than okay.
Yeah.
All right.